So today's calls is a discussion that we have not yet ever done a call on, but sometimes can be the source of the greatest consternation and stress for you all. The good news is that for most of you, this is just a review, but there are some important points that we want to bring up. So number one, that personal property can create some stress for even when their every other distribution among the family is clear. So, you know, surely we see when there are second marriages and there are children from first marriages, or there are assets like a piece of real estate that we want to leave to one child because they're involved in the business, or we're leaving a business, that those are opportunities potentially for disagreement. But even when the family gets along really well, sometimes personal property can cause great strain. It is a time of high emotional sensitivity, and sometimes for the children, and we've discussed this, this goes all the way back to when your three children were 3, 5, and 7, and they begin to regress and think back and say, you know, mom and dad, you know, have always favored my other two siblings, and once again, it's happening even at this point. By the way, there's been a study shown, and when they've asked children, you know, who is mom and dad's favorite, invariably everyone says it was my sibling. So there's probably a structural defect in that to begin with. But let's get to the issues, because again, some of you, there'll be pieces that'll be reminders, others it'll be some good information. First, personal property memo. In your wills, we always, almost always, never include personal property. We put it together to the extent that we're going to distribute certain assets in a memo. And that memo avoids the publicity of you having certain items on your estate that will go through the public domain through the probate process, or even if it's through a trust that the world knows what items that you have in your estate, the Patek Philippe watch, or the blue diamonds that you collected, or some artwork from travels that now is worth a significant amount. We feel it is better to have a separate memo, and it's an efficient way to distribute the assets. To the extent that you need to distribute these assets, a very important piece is that changing those distributions is you can just redo your will. And rather than, you can avoid that by putting a memo together, which then indicates I've hereby changed who these particular pieces of personal property should go to. And we just ask that you, in our annual reviews, that we're doing with you, we'll talk about these items and we'll look through your memo and we'll say, are there any changes? And we can either prepare that memo for you, or you can do that on your own. The question is whether or not these memos are enforceable. New Jersey says yes, okay? New Jersey says that as it's written, you can take what is in the memo and read it into the will. However, our view is if it is something of such extreme importance, we want you to put it into your will and not have that grand piano left on your memo. Why? Maybe the executor doesn't seek to enforce the memo. Maybe there is some questionability about the memo itself. Maybe there is a dispute and someone decides to take us to court. When you put the piano on your will, it does become public, and the IRS wants a specific appraisal for that piece of property. So those are the two downsides of putting it in your will, but it gives you clear certainty that you know that your executor will know about it and has a fiduciary duty to distribute it, and we know also that the IRS is going to say, okay, show me the appraisal to value that piece. The memo, nonetheless, is still a very important piece of your estate plan because we view it as a way to catalog your estate. And this is an important piece. We have seen on more than one occasion when things have gone missing. Does it happen because the cleaning people at the house, you know, cleaned off the jewelry of yours or your mom's when they knew that someone passed away? Is it the unscrupulous ambulance person or fire department person or police department? We would like to think that those days are behind us. We just don't know that without anybody there as a witness and without the primary person in the home there and everyone focusing on your passing away, is somebody really checking on these pieces? So watches have gone missing, artwork has gone missing, and we think it's a very good idea to catalog. It also puts the executor in a position to say, here are the pieces that we've seen. Now we've got to go around and we've got to hunt them down. Within the memo, the executor has a duty within, you know, usually for a period of at least 30 days to undertake a good faith effort to try to find these pieces of personal property. Should the executor also see on this list that there are some things of high value, they may take extra precautions, because if someone passes away, if you pass away, the police may tape up the front door, but maybe a family member is sneaking through the back door. There is a notorious story, a very recent one, in Vanity Fair about Michael Jackson's estate, and family members were lining up saying they wanted to get into the house, and they didn't have access to the house, and the fear was that these people were trying to go in and find bags of cash that Michael Jackson had, which, by the way, cash is, can be deemed to be personal property, or jewelry, et cetera, before, you know, anything official came in to shut down the estate. If it's a bank account, they can't get at it. If it's a securities account, they can't get at it, but they can, family members can come in and take the artwork off the wall if the doors are not necessarily sealed. We hope that this never happens to any of you. And often, as you know, these educational enrichment seminars, these focus series, are on reminding you the good things you're doing and having you help out your friends and making sure that they do things correctly when you're meeting with them. The third piece is, in those situations when we do have a second marriage and you say, listen, I have a beautiful piece of artwork, or there are certain items of personal property, furniture, antiques that I collected long before I was married my second time, that I want my surviving spouse to enjoy, but in the end, I want these pieces to go to my children. It is important in those instances that you do address these items of personal property and you put them into a trust. It's the same marital trust that you would have under any other circumstances where you're leaving these assets to your spouse, but the personal property here is furniture, or it's an automobile. It could even be jewelry. Although we question whether or not the jewelry you were going to be leaving to your second spouse to hold would be the same jewelry that you would then want your second spouse to leave down to your child. Usually that wouldn't necessarily happen. But for sure, there are things that you may want to protect your surviving spouse having, but that on your surviving spouse's passing should not go to your surviving spouse's children from his or her first marriage or who they care about. It should come back to your side of the family. So we do that through a Q-tip trust, and you all have Q-tip trusts under your wills now, which are designed not necessarily at all for tax planning purposes, but just to assure that the assets pass from you to your spouse, and then for their benefit, and then on their death down to your children. Item number four addresses items that can be very difficult to focus on. So we have, many of you are great hunters or are gun collectors. We know there has been a massive movement to requiring additional licensing on purchases, but some of you are antique collectors, some of you are just have an awesome love for the machine of a rifle and are collectors as well. It is very, very important that you have a license, but does that license transfer to your executor and your beneficiaries? And as you know, if they don't have a license, there could be a felony. surely that wasn't your intent, and often criminal laws are based on intent. But it is important to allow us to know, and that's why we're very detailed on what your personal property items are, and if you do have any collections, and we'll talk more about that in a minute, that we keep it insured, that we make sure that there are licenses for this, that we know if we have to travel. For example, guns cannot cross state lines without proper paperwork. We've had situations, and you've even heard on TV, where there was a former Marine, a retired Marine, who left Southern California to head to Central America on a goodwill mission, and he brought his rifle along. While going through Mexico, they found the rifle. He wasn't trying to keep it a secret, and he's been held now for several hundred days because of carrying an illegal weapon across state lines. So it is important that we know if there are items of personal property that are licensed, like what we call implements of bodily harm, and that they are properly licensed and insured, and that we have the appropriate people serving to transfer them. We were, you know, kind of joking that, you know, the whole team here, you know, will, and I hate to use the expression, dive on the sword, but will, if we had a client locally here, and Dominic and I were saying, you know, there's these items of personal property, we don't want them kept in the house, so he's going to run over and grab the guns in the gun box and bring them to storage, and he gets pulled over, and he's got the guns in his back seat, and he doesn't have the license, and he doesn't have the insurance card. So we for sure want to protect against those situations. Number five, if you have certain pets or exotic rare species, we see stories of people, you know, recently you may have heard our new Pope Francis. What do these popes do for pleasure? Pope John Paul II was a skier. Pope Benedict was a flyer. Well, some of these popes have kept birds. Exotic birds, who would actually, one story is many years ago, one would fly on the Pope's shoulder. Those things cannot cross state lines. There is a Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which does not allow these pieces, fish or birds. Fish would be another perfect example of certain types of exotic animals that cannot be transferred. So we need to know about those pieces. If you do collect them, and you need to be mindful of them, any that you currently have. Ivory. Ivory, obviously, is the result of an animal perishing, so there won't be a live animal there, but ivory is a very, very important protected item because it reflects that animals are being poached to take it. So we want to be respectful of the fact that if you have new ivory, or you may have thought it's old, but it turns out that it's new, that you'll have serious issues with transporting those pieces, shipping them, and even maybe transferring title to them. So we do need to know about them. If things are over 100 years old, or imported after 1989, rather, or imported before 1989, then we'll have some relief on these pieces. But be very focused on, you know, significant pieces. And I'm not talking about an ivory inlay, maybe necessarily on a belt or on a pendant. But anything of significance, we need to be mindful of that, as we've talked. Next is number six, intellectual property, copyrights, and so forth. We have several clients who have produced movies. Some of them have actually won significant awards. We have others who have produced soap operas. And sometimes they forget that even though that movie may have won great awards and they'll always be remembered by it, or that their soap opera, we have one that was two writers of a soap opera from the 70s all the way to the 90s. And they said, you know, interestingly enough, that's no longer hot here. That was my comment. But other countries pick up these the rights to produce these. And so we have one client that's had a wonderful life in retirement because Holland has caught on to their series that we produced from the from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and now it's their hottest thing. And so they're continuing to receive those residuals. It is important to focus on where we direct that money after you pass away. And if we put it into the personal property item, right, the personal property item then says, who is the benefit, who shall be the beneficiary of that piece? That's good. If we put it in the memo, we're identifying who should be the beneficiary of those residuals. If we have a situation where we fail to address intellectual property rights. There was a book. Many of you are professors and deans of schools that we've represented for years, and you are book publishers. Often the books tend to be connected with your academic background. But in other instances, there could be a popular book. It is important that that we identify that issue. And Dominic shows us a story through research that we've done where Marilyn Monroe passed away, and she had all of these residuals coming from her years of performing, and because it was not included in the personal property of her will, it passed with her residuary. And her residuary said it went to her movie agent, her agent. And so now, you know, 45 years, almost 50 years later, the movie agent and his child are receiving all of the residuals from Marilyn Monroe because the attorney and the client did not address in detail that there is personal property could have a significant value. So for sure we want to focus on that. Transportation. So we, many of you in the, have talked to us about whether or not you should hold hard assets. And we have clients who have gold bars, interestingly enough, up and down the vault on 6th Avenue where the major commercial banks used to be. There are still several vaults there. And now your family, your children may be out west. What do we do with these gold bars? Well, your executor's responsibility is to ship those. Do we use an armored truck? Well, maybe, because a gold bar, you know, has significant value. There's good reasons why you invest in those things for the tough times. You want to possess or take possession of hard assets for risk of inflation. But then when we want to ship that, or we want to ship the grand piano that may have a significant amount of net worth, we have to be very, very respectful of that cost. Your children may resent that. Your children may say, well, you know, Sally got the gold bars and it cost us $10,000 to ship those gold bars out to California for her. Well, our view is, and we've built this into all of your wills, our views are that all shipping of all personal property will be picked up by the estate as part of an estate expense. This way we don't have the children bickering over, well, your artwork is going to Australia because that's where you live now, and my stuff I'm just picking up, you know, at the house once we got the release. So, but certain times you may say, listen, I have one child that specifically, or one beneficiary that specifically wants this piece of artwork. We have a client that has collected over 1,000 posters from movie sets. And in subways throughout the past 100 years. It will be expensive to ship that. There's one beneficiary that this client has, and he wants that beneficiary to pay for the cost of shipping. So when these things come up, we want to remind you to tell us, do you want specific shipping for that to be picked up by that one beneficiary because it's a unique transfer? Also, wine collections. If there's over 5 gallons across state lines, there's a tax that may have to be shipped by someone with a liquor liquor license. Wine collections, many of you have, and you may have spent more money building out your wine cellars than you have on your wine. But as you know, many of you who have been savvy have purchased your wine, you know, in the early years, and now the values have gone up significantly as they've aged in your basement. So we want to be respectful of that. If you're named as a fiduciary, what tasks should you consider now to ensure that you're protected during probate? So we're on number 8 on our list. Be certain that the will includes language giving you, the executor, the ability to pay these debts, okay? Another item of personal property could be deemed to be a mortgage. So if you're transferring a house to your child, do you want that mortgage paid off? You wouldn't normally think of a mortgage as a piece of artwork or jewelry or a gun collection or a wine collection or exotic pets, but personal property can be characterized that way. So if we are transferring the house to the child, do we want the mortgage to be paid off? We want to empower the executor. Your wills do that, but we specifically want to make sure whether or not you want to transfer that house with that mortgage on there or not. A key piece to stay focused on. We also want to make sure that these properties are insured. We've seen great examples, and we were invited to speak at one of the largest and most prominent property and casualty insurers in the country to their top underwriters on what things they should be doing. In fact, we'll have a recap of that some point during the year. Imagine a situation, and my wife and I struggled with this, where your house was subject to flooding during Sandy, or that you have a house that the insurance, for whatever reason, the mortgage is paid off, but the insurance is paid annually, and soon after you passed away, the insurance was due, and then there was a fire. Now, not only are your executors cleaning up the paperwork, they're also cleaning up the ashes and the uninsured home. And there's no real way to get around that. Insurance companies want to pay a beneficiary. They will not deprive you of being paid. But what they do say is that's provided that we have coverage. So you have an open and shut case if the coverage has not been paid and there's damage afterwards. So if you're serving for your spouse or you're telling your loved one in your direction letter, we know this to make sure the properties are insured. We're on to our last two, bank accounts. So many of you own properties in separate states. Many of you own properties overseas. Have been inheriting properties overseas. You know, it's a big part of what we do is representing international clients as part of our Society for Trust and Estates Professionals and our affiliation with the European American Chamber of Commerce. We're doing more and more work with our international clientele. They may come here, you all may have come here, but you'll keep an account open in Portugal because you'll say, I just want to keep 10, 20, or 50,000 there. I go 2 or 3 times a year. I don't have to worry about exchange rate exposure. I just take the money out. Well, there are a couple of key pieces. Number one is assets that you have, and we'll call this personal property for this discussion, you must pay the income tax. Your assets worldwide generating income are subject to income tax. Number two, if your bank accounts have more than $10,000 in any given one, you have requirements under the Foreign Banking Regulations, FBAR, to report that offshore account and the income generated on it in June. It is a relatively new responsibility of yours, but it must be done and the penalties are severe. Why? The IRS wants to know if you have accounts overseas. One, because they want to see if you're avoiding paying income tax. Number two, they want to see if these assets have been declared because they want to have them picked up on John McManus's and his team's estate tax return. So you must disclose them. Number three is that this is not a bad thing completely as well. You know you always have to pay the tax, but it allows us to hunt down your assets. If we don't have an inventory list, a personal property list, that's the first place we go. The second is to go to your tax return. So we look to see all the places where you have assets that you're declaring income. And I remember when my grandfather passed away, my father always said, you know, grandpa's had bank accounts all over the place and we'll be finding bank books years from now. Not that he had, you know, a ton of money in any one of the accounts, but if he wasn't declaring, there was no interest, or he wasn't picking it up, or it didn't show where, how do we find it? tax returns historically are the way. Now we have FBAR, which requires these offshore accounts to have this done. Of course, if you have accounts in, you live in New Jersey and you have accounts in the Hamptons, or you live in New York and you have accounts down in Palm Beach, whatever it is, we have to have all of these bank books, and you have to be declaring it, and so that we can be clear on where these items are. Now we get to the last piece, and this is, how do we keep the family happy when we're dividing the assets? One of my dear friends who's got a long family history of passing high quality, highly valuable items in his family going back 150 years says, what we do in our family is we accept our mortality, and when mom and dad are starting to get older, we start to go around and say which pieces in the house we want. And mom or dad puts a little tag behind the piece, and so there's always that little gentle reminder. We still think it's important to keep an inventory, but at least the family knows, and they've identified them. And you can put on your inventory who gets each piece. So that's one of the simplest ways. And those can be specific bequests. We are not, this call cannot address, you know, how the mom's pearls or mom's diamond brooch, you know, slides underneath the carpet and comes up the other side and into daughter's hand. We, as your estate attorneys and officers of the court, must always address what we see in front of us, and we cannot recommend that those things happen. We're aware that they do, but we cannot recommend that. That is a way to assure, by actually hand transferring them to your loved ones, that they get them. But we do think that your other loved ones, if you have one child that's looking out for you and your two children are in California and Texas serve as professors at, you know, UCLA and University of Texas, and they find out where's all mom's jewelry and your daughter says mom had me keep them, that's dangerous. So we think that you should always put a memo together and identify this so there's no question about who gets them. The worst gift you can give your kids is the gift of fighting, and personal property is that area. We recommend that you be fastidious. Another way to do it is have the beneficiaries all agree, as we've said, but maybe there's personal property that they don't want or they're not sure about, and they say, well, you know, I think we should sell them. And maybe another family member wants them. In that instance, what you would do is that family member would get it, would get that item of personal property, say it's worth $10,000, and then the other two children of yours would each get a check for $10,000 so that you're all even. Then whatever's remaining in the estate would be divided in three equal shares. Another way to do it is if there's been no discussion about the items of personal property, and you have no desire to do that, is you can have the children draw lots. And so we've had several clients say, okay, what I want my children to do is there are 10 of them, and believe it or not, we have situations like that, but say there's 5 kids, each child draws one of the straws. So the child with the highest straw or the lowest straw picks first, and then you go in order all the way down to number 5. The one who gets pick number 5 then gets number 6 as well, and then the child that was number 4 gets number 7, so that when you go all the way through the first 10 items, the person who chose number 1 gets the first pick and the 10th pick. The child, person who chose number 2 gets the second pick and the 8th pick. There is risk in that, because then if there are 5 pieces or 3 pieces of personal property, the key piece of importance here is that maybe the rest of the family doesn't have those things that are valuable. Again, this is what people fight about, your children. And not that they may have bickered their whole lives, but the way that they mourn is by venting on things that they are just ordinarily wouldn't be so upset about. We think it's important to be proactive. We feel it's essential that you identify these pieces. Children often don't like to while you're alive because they think that you're planning for your demise soon coming, and we just need them to know that that is not what is important. So I need to do this with my own family and my parents to assure that there's no stress with us either.